Coastal Vermont, and WXLJ, Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Six inmates are suing New York over the state's planned prison lockdown during Monday's eclipse, saying it conflicts with their religious beliefs.
While the complaint is focused on this particular group of people, personally, I believe that everyone should be able to view it.
Many school districts are closing schools Monday for the eclipse, but one superintendent is gearing up for an eclipse-themed field day for teachers, students, and families.
When I see how kids get excited about science and about especially space science, to me, that's worth any amount of effort, because if they can take away something, and if I can instill that in a student for the rest of their lives, that's everything for me.
And Chef Curtis Hem shares a fresh spring dish, pasta with fresh arugula, peas, and Romano cheese.
I like it because it uses peas, which are, you know, kind of that, even though they're frozen, it's that fresh flavor. I think there's something about a pea that signifies springtime.
All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Mountain Orthotic and Prosthetic Services, a full-service practice committed to providing care for patients of all ages with offices in Lake Placid, Plattsburgh, and Malone. Details and referrals at mountainonp.com. And by Blue Seed Studios, a multidisciplinary arts center featuring classes for adults and youth, concerts, art exhibits, and more, bluseedstudios.org.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. We reported yesterday that all state prisons in New York will be locked down during Monday's solar eclipse. The Department of Corrections says it's enforcing the lockdown to protect the safety of inmates and staff.
But some inmates are pushing back, arguing that they have a constitutional right under their religious freedom to view the eclipse. A group of inmates, including one from Lake Placid, is suing the state on those religious grounds. Emily Russell spoke with Madeline Bird, one of the attorneys representing the inmates.
Religious freedom for everyone in this country is paramount, and I think it's a worthy cause to be able to represent prisoners. You know, by definition, if you're incarcerated, you're not guaranteed many rights, but one of the rights that you are guaranteed by the Constitution and that Congress has reinforced time and time again, as well as the courts, is the right to practice your sincerely held religious beliefs. And I really was taken by these plaintiffs, you know, their statements and their declarations and why this eclipse is important and significant to them.
And what is it about a solar eclipse that has a religious connection for some folks?
That's a good question. And I think most people don't generally think about it when you hear about the eclipse. But if you think back historically for the last, you know, as long as solar eclipses have been happening and humans have been witnessing them, we've been trying to come up with reasons for why they happen. And a lot of the explanations for eclipses throughout history have come from various religions. Just because now we have science to know what an eclipse is, it means it's, you know, the moon passing in front of the sun for a certain amount of time so that you can't see the sun. That might be the scientific explanation, but there's still many people who adhere to the religious explanations that have been provided previously. And so just to give a few examples, and we list this in the lawsuit, one that I was less familiar with is the religion of Islam. The story goes, and many Muslims believe, that when there's an eclipse, you're supposed to do a special prayer. And the purpose behind that prayer is from when Muhammad lost one of his favorite sons, Ibrahim, there was allegedly a solar eclipse at that same time. And so Muhammad himself prayed this prayer, which is called in English the eclipse prayer. So, you know, that's just one example of some religious significance to some people. But then there's also a similar story kind of in Christianity, which is that many people believe that when Jesus was crucified, actually, there might have been an eclipse. because there are verses in the Bible that refer to the sky going dark when it was otherwise supposed to be light. And so there are certain Christians who believe that it's a time to get together, to congregate, you know, just generally to appreciate who they believe created this earth and who created the sun and the moon and everything in between.
What is the hope for this lawsuit? Is it just that the plaintiffs and inmates in other similar religious situations will be able to see the eclipse? Or is the intent that, you know, every inmate in a New York State prison would be able to watch the eclipse on Monday?
Yeah, that's a fair question. The complaint itself and this motion is narrowly tailored to inmates who suggest or who request a religious accommodation and who are able to explain why they have or need for a religious accommodation. I will point out, though, that obviously in an ideal world, everyone would be able to view the eclipse. It's not kind of a big ask to let people go outside in the prison yard when they normally would on any other day during this time. So while the complaint is focused on this particular group of people, personally, I believe that everyone should be able to view it.
How has the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision responded to the lawsuit?
Well, the state originally was a bit slow to respond to us. We tried to reach out to them last week, and we served them the papers last week, and then again, the file stamped copies, which is what you have to do for service on Monday. The court has set a deadline for noon today for the Department of Corrections to respond and say whether they were going to waive a hearing or whether they would have be okay with a magistrate judge hearing the case. And we heard back by a filing just before noon that they wanted to waive the hearing. We don't want to waive the hearing. We think that it's important for these plaintiffs and others similarly situated to be heard. But we've had a conference with the court, and we're hopeful that we can work with docs, and hopefully they'll be able to come to some sort of resolution in the near future. Obviously, this thing is coming up on Monday.
That was attorney Madeline Bird speaking with Emily Russell. Bird is with the legal firm that's representing six inmates, including one from Lake Placid, who are suing the state over the planned prison lockdown during Monday's solar eclipse. New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says legislative leaders are closer to reaching a budget agreement. The original deadline was passed Monday. Hastie said yesterday that negotiations are progressing on big issues such as Medicaid, education, and housing.
I don't see anything as being a problem at this point, but it's just a lot. And as I was trying to come up with an analogy of the train is going in the right direction, but maybe we're riding on the local track and not the express track.
The final state budget agreement is typically decided by the speaker, the Senate leader, and the governor, all Democrats. A budget extender that funds state programs and staff will continue through Thursday.
Police have arrested a Brooklyn man in connection with Monday's shooting in Elizabethtown. 28-year-old Quavon Harris was charged with second-degree murder and two counts of third-degree criminal possession of a weapon. Police say an altercation on Lincoln Pond Road led to the shooting of 40-year-old William Ball of Moriah. Responding troopers found his body in a vehicle. Harris was picked up by police at the Stewart Shops 4 miles up the road. He was in custody at the Essex County Jail yesterday. Police continued to investigate the shooting. Anyone with information is asked to call state police at 518-873-2777.
Potsdam's village trustees have voted to adopt the pro-housing community pledge. North Country Now reports Potsdam's town board did the same last month. Governor Kathy Hochul created the designation in 2023 to incentivize communities to address local housing crises. Communities that adopt the pledge get priority when applying for certain state grants. With the designation, Potsdam Village will now try to simplify permitting for affordable housing development and multifamily homes. At a recent meeting, Village Trustee Monique Tyrion said the village should also do what it can to keep taxes low for residents who are struggling to keep up with rent prices and low wages. You can keep up with news and more from NCPR throughout the day at our website, ncpr.org, or follow the station on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:10. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, a bright spring recipe from Chef Curtis Hem coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Matthew Johnson out of Sackett's Harbor. Northern Light is supported by St. Lawrence Nursery's Potsdam, accepting orders now through April 12th for cold hardy fruit and nut trees. Details at slngrow.com. And by North Country's Children's Museum, Potsdam, with hands-on and minds-on exhibits and programs for children 12 and under and their families. Open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 to 5. NorthCountryChildrensMuseum.org. Our spring fundraiser starts Monday, Eclipse Day. Be an early bird right now. Give in any amount. Snag our NCPR Eclipse sticker or give $10 a month and get the limited edition NCPR Eclipse t-shirt. NCPR.org/give. Thanks.
NASA researchers will be using aircrafts out of Fort Drum in Watertown during the total solar eclipse on Monday afternoon to study the Earth's atmosphere. The uncrewed aircraft systems will fly out of Fort Drum before, during, and after Monday's eclipse. Researchers will be measuring meteorological differences to see how sudden changes in weather affect the Earth's atmosphere. The aircrafts will gather data like relative humidity, temperature, pressure, and wind. Officials at Fort Drum say this data will go towards research to better understand incoming and outgoing energy from Earth. It could also contribute to better forecasting of sudden weather events like wildfire smoke or volcanic eruptions.
The Seaway International Bridge in Akwesasne is in the path of totality. That's the bridge that connects Messina to Cornwall, Ontario. Bridge director Mark Chenier says traffic will be stopped briefly Monday afternoon.
The bridge won't be closed. It's just the traffic will be suspended for 5 minutes during the peak of the eclipse. Just going by memory, it's going to be at 3:23, and it will finish 5 minutes later, which is 3:28.
About 8,000 cars cross the Seaway International Bridge every day. The bridge will stay open to pedestrians during the eclipse. It'll also be open to any emergency vehicles that need to use it.
Many schools in the North Country will be closed on Monday because of the eclipse. St. Lawrence Lewis BOCES Superintendent Tom Burns says each school has been figuring out what's best for them. Many are closing because of logistics.
It's going to be dark that afternoon, and there could be a considerable amount of traffic, people from outside the area, because we're in a favorable place to view this. So not knowing how many people will be on the roads.
But Catherine Wheeler reports one school is making a day of it.
Mark White has been waiting for this moment for years. Back when he was an earth science teacher, he wanted to take his students out to see an eclipse that was passing over the North Country. But school officials foiled his plans.
After that point, I said, if this ever happens again, I'm going to make sure that the kids, my kids or whoever I'm with at the time, will get the full experience of it. And that's kind of what brought us here today.
White's now the superintendent of Herman DeKalb Central Schools, and there's not much that could stop him from taking students out to witness the total solar eclipse. White and the district staff have been planning for this one special school day for 2 years.
When I see how kids get excited about science and about especially space science, to me, that's worth any amount of effort to put into it. Because if they can take away something, and if I can instill that in a student for the rest of their lives, that's everything for me.
To make it easier on teachers, White said he'd go into classrooms from pre-K through high school and answer students' questions and do some experiments to get the kids ready for the day. And it seems to be working. Walking through the halls, White turns a lot of heads.
Hey, touch the sun. Make sure you touch the sun on the way by. It's hot. Here. Whoa.
I can't remember which one's up.
Hey.
I'm
carrying the sun with me. That's right.
In one arm, he's got the sun, a giant orange exercise ball that's at least 50 years old. In the other, a big gallon bucket filled with props. White's headed to a fifth grade classroom to teach them all about the upcoming total solar eclipse.
Hey, are we ready?
We are ready.
Okay.
The fifth graders are excited, but focused. He launches into the lesson. What's a total solar eclipse? He throws out.
It's kind of like where the moon goes in front of the sun, so you can't see the sun anymore. It's going to be just dark at night.
Exactly.
He pulls out objects from the bucket. There's a couple of Earths and some moons. He's trying to explain relative size and distance. Basically, how the moon, which is much smaller than the sun, will be able to block it out during the eclipse. He takes the fifth graders into the hallway to demonstrate just how far away we are from the sun.
My longest hall, which is 53 meters long, that the sun, which is approximately 0.5 meters in diameter, is at the other end of the hall, and the Earth is represented by the approximate size of a pea, and the moon is actually smaller than a size of a couscous.
One student hustles down to the end of the hallway and drops off the sun. Two others are selected to hold the minute moon and the pea-sized Earth.
All right, so here we go.
He tells them to take out their very official scientific instruments, their pointer finger and their thumb held out in front of their face, almost like they're pinching the air, but they're using it to measure.
You should be able to do this. Use your scientific instrument, please. Figure out how big that sun is. All right, turn around, look at the moon. It's about the same size. That's important.
On eclipse day, White is switching up the schedule at Herman DeKalb. Kids will get to school at 10 a.m. They'll have a few hours of normal classes, and then they'll go outside for the rest of the day. And parents will be able to join later, too, so families can be all together. The younger kids will go through a space obstacle course. There will be a photo booth and special eclipse-themed snacks. And when the moon starts to take a bite out of the sun, students will split off into their classes.
And you use some of the stuff they've built, some of the shadow viewers they've built, some of the pinhole viewers that they've built. They'll be using all those in their classroom settings. And the parents will be involved in that as well.
White's buildup is working on the students. He says they're pestering the teachers with unending questions about space. Fifth grader Hannah says she's ready to finally see what he's been hyping up.
I'm just really wondering how it looks because I haven't seen it in real life. So I'm just really excited.
White says he's manifesting clear skies, and it'd be helpful if everyone around the North Country could too. Catherine Wheeler, North Country Public Radio, in DeKalb.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, Chef Curtis Hem uses an early spring herb to create a peppery spring pasta dish. Shares the recipe in a moment. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note. We'll meet the hawk that hunts in packs coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
We've got snow and sleet and rain and wind moving into the region. We have a winter storm warning, winter weather advisory in effect from tonight throughout much of tomorrow as well. Could see some heavy snow in some of the higher elevations of the Adirondacks and the Green Mountains, especially tomorrow. We'll start out with some rain a little later today. It's probably going to change to sleet and snow tonight as temperatures fall to around 30. And then tomorrow, we've got snow as well, light to moderate snow at times. Some areas could see several inches by tomorrow night. Then a wintry mix on Friday and probably again on Saturday, but then clearing skies on Sunday. And at this point, the extended forecast calls for clear skies Monday, eclipse day. Keep our fingers crossed. There is snow in the forecast, though, over the next day or so, but it is spring and time to think green. Arugula is a cold, hardy green. It's one of the first to emerge this season. And Chef Curtis Hem shares a fresh spring dish, pasta with fresh arugula, peas, and Romano cheese. He told me that it's simple to prepare and would make a great light meal or a side dish.
I like it because it uses peas, which are, you know, kind of that, even though they're frozen, it's that fresh flavor I think there's something about a pea that signifies springtime, mm-hmm. but you can certainly use fresh peas if you have them. And it's something that's relatively easy to have on hand. So the penne or whatever pasta you choose to have is in your pantry. The arugula maybe you pick up from the co-op or the market. Peas you have in the freezer, and then everything else is something that's stable. The pecorino cheese we always have on hand. So this is a really easy dish to make. And I love, I mean, we throw arugula at the end. We throw arugula into our gnocchi. I put arugula as a base for sliced roast meats.
I was going to ask you about the penne pasta, because there are a gazillion types of pasta out there. What do you like about penne pasta, and why does it work so well with the other things in this dish?
So let me explain the origin of the dish first, and then that will kind of lead towards penne.
Right.
So the origins of this dish is a breast cancer project that I worked on, and I still have, called Pink Ribbon Cooking. And what I wanted to do was, so pasta, as we know it, is a very high glycemic load food item. And I wanted to reduce the glycemic load for cancer patients. So I put in a lot of arugula with pasta so that the portion size could be more plant-based than, say, pasta-based. And that was the origin of this dish. And the penne, because you're using it with a fork and you're kind of stabbing at the penne pasta and trying to get the arugula, kind of slows the eating down a little bit. And so that was the origin of the dish, and that is why I chose penne pasta. But you could use bucatini, you could use gnocchi, you could use whatever pasta you want, spaghetti, angel hair, you name it. But I like penne because it really, the stringiness of the arugula as it wilts kind of creates something nice with the penne. I just like the way it feels.
And this is, we talked about the ingredients, just a handful of ingredients and just a few steps. I mean, you prepare the pasta and then you're basically kind of tossing it with most of the other ingredients.
Yeah, so you're going to go ahead and you're going to put the pasta, I always say, in the manufacturer's directions, because mm-hmm. depending on what you buy is going to determine the cooking time of the pasta. You know, but if you're buying fresh pasta, it doesn't take long. But so while the pasta's cooking, you kind of combine the arugula, the olive oil, and the lemon juice. Put that in a large bowl. When the pasta's about a minute from being al dente, you add the peas to the pasta water, right? So you're not having a second dish to cook. You're not dirtying another dish. So you got a pasta pot. You're going to throw the peas in there. They take 1 minute to cook, and then you drain everything. You toss it in that bowl with the olive oil, the lemon juice, and the arugula. The arugula wilts from the heat of the peas and the pasta, and then you finish it with grated pecorino cheese and salt and pepper. It really is one of the simplest dishes you can get, but it's so delicious and good. And, you know, if you are concerned about portion size, you know, this will make 8 bases for entrees. It doesn't have to be huge. And you can double up on the arugula just fine.
Let me just ask about, again, that peppery arugula, and you've got the lemon juice, you've got the peas. Those are the sort of, what, maybe the 3 flavors here that we're talking, besides the Romano cheese too, but you've got the peppery greens, the peas, and then you've got that lemon juice.
Yeah, the way you're going to notice this dish is you're going to get that first kind of aroma inhale of the pasta that should be dominant.
Uh-huh.
As that kind of gets consumed, you might get the lemon and the olive oil first, or you might get that pepperiness of the arugula, depending on whether you kind of put it in your mouth and bite first, or whether you put it in your mouth and just kind of notice things. The pepper can be as dominant as you want in that. But the peppery arugula, for me, is what's going to stand out. So I get the heatiness of the pasta. I get the bite of the arugula. Then there's that freshness of the pea with the lemon and olive oil and kind of coating my tongue. And then I get the cheese, which is somewhat of a sharp, creamy, kind of sounds, you know, contrasting, but it's a sharp creaminess. So, and we don't melt the cheese. We put it on off the heat so it doesn't kind of bind to the liquid or anything like that.
And the peas kind of get sort of what, blanched in the pasta water?
Yeah, they get fully cooked in the pasta water for that 1 minute.
Very simple. Yeah,
really is simple. And it's a great springtime dish. Now, this is great with, I do this with pan roasted salmon. I do it with grilled chicken, both breast and thigh. This is great on a quick medium rare steak that just sliced up, or like a tagliata, I should say. It's great with shrimp. So you could sear the shrimp. Fantastic stuff. You know, and if you sear the shrimp, then once the shrimp are seared, combine your arugula, olive oil, lemon juice in that shrimp pan, and then toss the pasta in that.
Ooh, that sounds good. Or maybe
that
just
way you get all that fond and all that flavor from the pan in your dish.
Or maybe just a big slice of crusty bread.
Yeah. You got me there. I'm a carb hound. I would certainly partake in that.
Yeah, exactly. Here.
And there's enough good local bread. I mean, there's no reason not to have that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. This was simple, perfect for the season. I love the timeliness of it. And it sounds really good. Another one of those recipes I've got to try. So, yeah.
You know, if you don't like the pasta, you can use the chickpeas too.
Hmm.
It's really good. You could just kind of roast some chickpeas. Open up a can, rinse them, let them sit out for an hour, then roast them.
Uh-huh.
And it's really good.
Thanks, Curtis.
You're welcome, Todd.
Have a good day.
Take care.
Chef Curtis Hem owns the Carriage House Cooking School in Peru, New York, and is the executive chef at The View Restaurant at the Mirror Lake Inn Resort and Spa in Lake Placid. And he joins us each month to share a favorite seasonal recipe.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. It's about 8:26. Good morning. I'm Monica Sandreski. So many events going on throughout the region and plenty coming up for the eclipse on Monday, including in West Chazy at the Parker Family Maple Farm. They're hosting a free party for everybody. Plenty of parking, plenty of field view, food, beer, bathrooms. They say what else is needed. The first 200 people get free glasses. There's free entry. You can find out more from the Parker Family Maple Farm in West Chazy.
Coming up on April 10th, that's next Wednesday after the eclipse, Megaflora. Adirondack conifers and the woody wildflowers we look up to is a presentation being given by Ed Cans, naturalist, author, photographer, Adirondack guide. It'll be at the Saranac Lake Free Library in the Cantwell Room, noon on April 10th. Stop by, and it's called their Library Lunch Series, and you can hear Ed Cans talk about the woody wildflowers we look up to.
And coming up this evening, the Cornell Cooperative Extension in St. Lawrence County is hosting a Starting Seeds Workshop. Learn all you need to know about starting seeds successfully with Ken Kogut. He's a Master Gardener volunteer. It's a two-hour workshop, and he'll be explaining the conditions seeds need in order to germinate and how to achieve them, whether indoors or outdoors. This is part of a beginning homesteading series that they're doing. You can find out more from the St. Lawrence County Cornell Cooperative Extension.
And don't forget, our spring fundraiser starts on Monday morning, and it's also Eclipse Day. Give any amount, snag our exclusive Eclipse sticker, perfect for your car, your refrigerator, your guitar case. $10 a month, and you can select the limited edition NCPR Eclipse t-shirt. These are really cool t-shirts. Midnight blue with a fun Eclipse graphic on the front. Top 10 Eclipse memories on the back. Get yours with a donation at ncpr.org/give.
And everyone who contacts us this week will get their name entered in all of our spring prize drawings, including the Early Bird Special, a $1,000 Visa gift card. So take a moment now, continue your support with a new contribution. Continue support or make a new contribution. Increase your monthly donation, any amount, whatever works for you, works for NCPR. Give now at ncpr.org/give.
That's it for Northern Light on this Wednesday, April 3rd. More of Morning Edition in a moment.
After that, it's the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock. Then this afternoon on Here and Now, if you can believe it, D&D turns 50 this year. The role-playing game has had a massive impact worldwide, and the company behind it has more gaming ambitions. Hear more on Dungeons & Dragons' 50th birthday coming up this afternoon on Here and Now between 1 and 3 o'clock right here on NCPR. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Mo. Thanks for listening. Be well.